What is up? This is Brent from Burgundy Blog. It is Sunday evening, October 15th, 2023, and the Commanders snapped their three-game losing skid today in Atlanta, beating the Falcons 24-16 to even up the old record of 3-3. Back to 500, right on the nose, where head coach Ron Rivera feels most comfortable. It's a nice little win today, I think. Not super special, not super memorable, but a critical one, at least for the sake of this season. So I'm ready to give them quite a bit of credit tonight for a slightly messy win on the road against a team that, yeah, isn't great, but doesn't totally suck, when their backs were against the wall. After the Chicago debacle, I was getting pretty close to writing off the season, but it can at least be said about this team that they have self-respect and they're not dead yet. Coming into this game, I believed the Commanders at 2-3 and on a three-game slide to be somewhat capable of beating just about any team, but overall a very average team, maybe at best, and certainly a very desperate team with no momentum and having had a week and a half to stew over just an utter humiliation against the Bears on Thursday Night Football. I did not feel, as of this morning, that I had a great handle on what exactly the Falcons were or are. They came in with a winning record. I was aware that Ridder had arguably his best game as a pro last week, but also that he hasn't been super impressive overall. That they have a lot of talent at the skill positions, a well-regarded and possibly a little bit underachieving offensive line, and maybe sort of an average defense with quite a few former blue chippers who either never quite hit their ceilings like Okuda, AJ Terrell, Bud Dupree, or who are in some state of decline slash conclusion like Calais Campbell and Grady Jarrett. Coming out of this game, I would say my overall estimation of both the Commanders and the Falcons is probably only confirmed and intensified. That is to say, these are both middling squads in a game that probably will not have great lasting significance in the overall NFL landscape, but the Commanders badly needed it and they got it. Whereas the Falcons really just made too many mistakes to deserve it. Atlanta strikes me as a team that could be pretty good, but Ridder was just bad today, and I don't feel like their fans should be super optimistic that he's a long-termer. Interestingly, he was picked in, I think, the third round of the same draft that Sam Howell was picked in. Of course, Howell went in the fifth. Ridder definitely had some accuracy issues, seemingly a lot of problems with like managing the game, the line of scrimmage, and controlling the clock. Although his head coach, Arthur Smith, came off looking pretty crappy in this one too in that regard, because clearly the two of them were having a ton of difficulty getting the plays communicated clearly and on time. I think if you added good quarterback play to the Falcons, they would be a pretty good team even right now. Although, I don't know, the head coach to me just does not exude this confident winning vibe. That being said, this was a game that Washington really, really just had to have, lest the season start to completely rattle off the tracks. And my top theme in this one really just has to be credit for them accomplishing that. I mean, they went on the road and they found a way. In fact, they did a little bit better probably than just finding a way. It wasn't one of those clawing and scratching and just barely eking out a disgusting win. They did fall behind 7-3, but then they built up a 2-touchdown lead in the middle part of the game. Yes, they allowed Atlanta back to close the gap and then ultimately within a few yards of what could have potentially been a tying touchdown. But I would say the feel, in real time, was that they pretty much controlled this game. And although it became possible at the end, I wasn't really feeling and expecting that they were going to blow it. It was a pretty good, decisive, if not totally authoritative win. Obviously, Rivera and Del Rio took a ton of heat over the mini-bye for the really bad momentum and the wildly underachieving defensive effort. And so I credit them and Bieniemy for putting together a plan that maybe didn't totally overwhelm the Falcons, but did ultimately work. Now, the box score, glancing at it, I don't know that it totally reflects what I just said. Falcons had almost twice as many first downs. I think it was 25-13. Falcons had over twice as many total yards. They went over 400. Commanders didn't even hit 200. And so, as usual, when you see a discrepancy like that and yet the other team wins, it's generally because of turnovers, and indeed, that was certainly the case. Commanders came away with three interceptions, two really nice ones, those being Fuller's and then Davis's at the end, which is a super athletic play. I'd say that's the second monster play he's made this season, the other one being at Denver. And then St. Juice got a pick in the end zone on what was just a complete gift from Ritter when he was at his worst. On top of that, the Falcons failed to convert two of their three fourth down attempts. And so I would say that, yeah, those turnovers, including the turnovers on downs, that pretty much, at least that, plus Howell being super duper sharp in the first half, that was the game. I can't describe this as a win that really changes my overall outlook for the season or the next couple of years. I think they took advantage of an inexperienced and limited quarterback and a head coach in Arthur Smith who just seemed a little out of it today. It was a win that made me feel like overall, as a team and as a staff, their hearts are still in it, but not one that really made me think that they can actually or will later on this season be able to compete with the best in the league. And although they did what was needed, it didn't really move the needle for me on the prospects of this staff eventually convincing Josh Harris. Howell was really nice in the first half, at least right up until that last possession before half, when he started holding the ball again quite a bit too long and took two ugly sacks. But prior to that, really, really nice game for him. He was sharp, quick decisions. There was one first quarter sack, probably also on him, but I liked how he got McLaurin involved early. The quick game was popping a little bit. He seemed confident and in control. Second half, the accuracy wavered a little bit, I thought, but no picks, and aside from the sacks, no big blunders. So Howell now has played 6 games this season, 7 in his career. Obviously, that's still not a ton. He can certainly continue to grow and will and change as a player. But I think this is no longer too little information to start looking for patterns and, you know, beginning to formulate an overall impression of him as a player. And I'm feeling that with every game, it is only becoming clearer and clearer that there is one and exactly one thing left on the list of concerns that could potentially stand in the way of him becoming a good multi-year QB1 in this NFL. And that, of course, is his propensity to hold the ball and take sacks. Granted, there are some games where he does a little bit better job of it, but this is a trait he has manifested multiple times in every game in his career. And furthermore, it was a known tendency of his in college. So without a doubt, no matter what you feel about the Commanders' current offensive line, it is a thing. And in fact, I think I'm saying that it is the thing that most threatens his long-term viability. And frankly, even if not prohibitive, I think at this point, it seems likely that it will be the thing that keeps him from being really an elite player probably at any point in his career. However, at the risk of burying the lead, he looks really good otherwise. I mean, I'm starting to feel more and more confident that it is going to be him for the next few years. I mean, if at some point there's just a truly dreadful season and they're picking high enough to be considering or eligible for a truly blue-chip prototypical quarterback, I mean, okay, I guess we'll cross that bridge if we come to it. But Howell, considering how little experience he still has, is showing so many good qualities, so many good traits. He's going to be tough to upgrade. I think he's going to be very tough to upgrade in the next couple of years. For one thing, he just knows what he's doing. Okay, like the actual operation of running the plays and running the offense, it's pretty smooth. He's not Tom Brady, he's not Aaron Rodgers at the line. That will develop and that may come. I mean, maybe not to that extent, but that will, you know, he will grow as he becomes an experienced, savvy vet. But it's just extremely encouraging. He just always seems like he knows what he's doing. So that part's great. I've been extremely impressed with his toughness all along. His teammates clearly love playing for him. I would say it feels like he's contributing to getting the best out of them and maximizing his skill position players. His arm is good enough to make all the throws. His accuracy seems good enough and sometimes really good. He can run on draws, on RPOs, and he can scramble a little. Again, it's not optimal pocket presence, but I mean, in this one, he had another QBR well over 100, and it looked like that. It matches, you know, the eye test agrees at least in the first half when they built a nice lead, which was super important against this team in the Falcons, whose strength is the running game. I mean, I worried for the Commanders' sake that if they got behind early that, you know, the Falcons were going to start looking to run out the clock starting in the second quarter if they had been in that position. With Bijan Robinson and Tyler Algier, I mean, they would have been in position to just chew up clock. But Sam Howell took it on himself to prevent them from being in that position. So yeah, it's another big one in the plus column for him. Now, regarding his colleagues in the skill positions on offense, I think I actually have something specific to say about each of, five different receivers tonight. For McLaurin, I thought it was great. Great. It's always good when they get him involved early. That's been a problem off and on over the course of his career, often through no fault of his own, but more just in terms of targets. In this game, I think he had 6 catches for maybe 80-something yards, which does not jump off the box score, but his contribution to this one, I felt, was more significant than those numbers look. I think it's sort of palpable. His catches for first downs really juice up the whole offense. Curtis Samuel looked good again. I think I'm guilty of often overlooking him. This is the 3rd straight game he scored a touchdown in. He also, is rarely putting up monster numbers in a given game, but he's been a very useful, solid, reliable player since recovering from what was apparently the worst groin injury of all time. Bieniemy is getting him involved in multiple ways, routes, carries, sweeps. So shout out to Curtis Samuel for ultimately, I'd say, at least coming close to justifying his contract after I was pretty ready to write him off as a Paul Richardson type signing when he was struggling so much to get on the field. Now, 2 in the not so nice category. Jahan Dotson, I'm surprised he's struggling a little bit this year. Of literally all the projected major contributors this year, I did not expect it would be him to be having a problem with drops, but it is. It's weird. I don't know. I still trust him. I mean, he felt very reliable last year, and as a rookie, he just seems so ready to be a pro. I really don't think this is the beginning of him turning into a longer-term disappointment, but really, I was thinking that maybe even as soon as this year, he could become the more productive of the two starting receivers, but that is absolutely not happening. And then on Diami Brown, I'm not going to kill the guy. He is what he is. He's your 4th receiver. He comes in to stretch the field and scare the defense a little. I mean, I guess he does that. And of course, this is the second in a row where he had a step on a guy deep and he got a hand on it but couldn't bring it in. Now, there was definitely some contact. And I guess some people thought maybe it was interference. Maybe his one arm got hooked a little bit. I don't know. It could be. I'll acknowledge that. But for a variety of reasons, it just kind of seems like he's always just close to the big game-breaking play. I would like to see him stop being close and having to rely on excuses and start actually finishing a little. Lastly, Crowder. Obviously, this is about the punt return. 1 return in this game, 61 yards. This is very obviously something that Dax Milne can't do and hasn't done, and really nobody on this team has done for a long time, maybe since Crowder did it in his first go-round. And that led to a quick touchdown, and that essentially ended up being the game. A play like that is how you end up putting up 24 points and winning despite gaining fewer than 200 total yards on the ground. For a team that lives and dies by one-score games and has ever since Rivera got here, it's shocking to me that they have not put more emphasis on dynamic punt returning, and that is exactly why. All right, some specific things about a few more guys. Kalik Hudson finally got on the field, played a little defense, and like he always does, made some plays. 2 big plays in this one, I think they were a 3rd and a 4th down stop. So I'm not sure how many total snaps he registered, but if that didn't earn him a little bit more the next time, I really don't know what more he could have done. His fellow linebacker, much maligned Cody Barton in this one, did accumulate 14 tackles, had 1 tackle for loss, and there was a couple times that I thought I saw him looking pretty decent. He will unfortunately be most remembered for what could have been a disastrous penalty in the 4th quarter when his illegal hands to the face on Ridder turned a drive-killing sack into a fresh set of downs. On that play specifically, he clearly did deserve that penalty. It was obvious hands to the face. I'm certainly not going to let him off the hook, although I will say, I don't know, it was kind of awkward. Like, he had his hands in the air, he's trying to knock down the pass. Obviously, he should have figured out a way to prevent that, but I think that was a little more klutzy than stupid. I still would have to say, at the risk of getting booed, Barton hasn't been good this year. I don't think he's been quite as bad as the social media narrative says. And I'd say Del Rio clearly agrees, because the dude is still playing every single snap. On this subject, I just thought it was interesting that John Keim on his podcast earlier this week mentioned briefly a sense on the staff that Barton wasn't exactly, has not to this point yet been exactly benefiting as much from top-notch defensive line play as was expected when he signed here. And that, in fact, there have been some times where he has been put in fairly unwinnable situations that made him look quite bad. So I'm not exactly caping for the guy. He's been below average for sure. He hasn't been nearly what I expected when that signing got made. But I'm sorry, personally, I don't think he's hopeless. Brian Robinson, quick shout, just a super physical, beastly finish to that touchdown on the screen pass. He just blasted a defender straight into the end zone. That was sweet. Cornelius Lucas, called upon to start in place of Charles Leno, who sadly experienced the family tragedy yesterday. Lucas barely even got mentioned all game. I mean, Howell got sacked 5 times, but I was not detecting that it was real, that any of them were directly on Lucas. And being pretty anonymous when you get your number called to start at left tackle on zero notice for the entire game, that is exactly what you want in a backup tackle. So nice little showing by him. Casey Tuhill made a couple of big plays. He's a player that certainly doesn't get a lot of fanfare with so many other high-profile players on his defensive line. But he's actually a freak athlete, and I think kind of a borderline NFL starting defensive end in his own right. And I think he's going to get a multi-year deal when the time comes from somebody. Lastly, Jamin Davis. I probably have not made a big enough deal about his good year so far on this pod. I mean, even now in his third year, he's probably still not the commanding presence that they envisioned when they drafted him in the mid-first. And I think it took him much longer than expected based on that draft status, but he's done a ton this year to shed that bust label. And he has now had a very critical and special play in 2 of the Commanders' 3 wins on the year. So good for him for starting to break through. Commanders have the Giants up next, and obviously that is a very winnable game. Or as doomed as the season felt 10 days ago, they could actually be 4-3 a week from now. I'm not sure how possible it is for them to make a huge statement in that game, because even a convincing win would probably still be largely ignored. But if they get this one, then it starts to become fairly likely that they will at least be playing meaningful football in December, which is generally my top hope for any season. Now, for me, it's going to take a big winning streak or a substantial upset or two to make any dent in my skepticism on Rivera. But that's fine. I'm settling into a nice little groove of enjoying every game, really, if for no other reason than to clarify what we have and what we can expect to eventually have in Sam Howell. I do think, regardless of what happens with the staff, and really even regardless of what happens with the final record this year, there's going to be a lot of change in this roster from 2023 to 2024, because they have an unusually high number of guys on expiring contracts. They have a ton of cap space, and it will be the first offseason for the new owners to really do anything, should they choose to exert any influence on the football side. So, if by January we can confirm that it is in fact Howell, and if they can do a little bit better job this offseason than last offseason of patching the known holes, and of course, especially if there's a new coach, next year should be fun as hell. We'll be right back.